I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barber shop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are author Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, Dave Zirin, sports editor for The Nation, and Mario Loyola, who writes for the National Review and works with the Texas Public Policy Foundation. That's a conservative think tank. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas, welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Jimmy. Hey, hey, hey.
Great. How are you guys?
Good, man. Dave Z, Super Mario, A-Train. What's good? Let's get it popping. All right, let's start things off with a scheduling smackdown. For the first time in history, a president's request to address a joint session of Congress has been publicly rejected. House Speaker
Boehner. I don't know why you want
to call
him.
Thank you. I don't know why I want to do
let's
that.
Not even,
Boehner. Let's not go there.
Let's not even right. say what you were... Boehner.
Well, yeah, I mean, he told President
Obama.
He told Obama to kick rocks and pick another day, Michelle.
Scheduling SmackDown. I like that. Yes, that's what happened. For those who don't know, the president wants to give a major address on the economy next week. He's asked for Wednesday night. Members of Congress are getting back from their August break. They're traveling on Tuesday, so they're asked to report back by a certain time on Wednesday. So he wanted to come Wednesday night. Then the White House says that they consulted with the speaker, but the speaker says, no, they didn't. And so he says that it's too – he says that the speaker said it's – he raised parliamentary and logistical objections. So he said, how about Thursday? So Thursday now he competes with the president said, okay, and he competes with the NFL's regular season opener. And, oh, by the way, Mr. Boehner is going to give his own speech on jobs a week later, Jimmy.
Wow. You know what, fellas? Is it just me, or does it always seem like the president, you know, oh, well, first of all, how's he going to come out over this? Because, you know, from the tax cut compromise to the debt ceiling debate, it always seems like he's getting pushed in a corner. A-Train.
Yeah, I mean, you know, instead of saying that it was logistical or security reasons, you know, House Speaker Boehner should have just said, you know, I have a spray tan appointment. I mean, essentially what he's been doing and what the Republican Party has been doing is saying no to everything that President Obama says. If President Obama says up, they'll say down. If he says the sky is blue, they'll say it's green. I mean, you know, like you noted, Jimmy, this is the first time in congressional history that this has ever happened. This is a commander-in-chief, mind you. You know, this is not, you know, some manager at a Chuck E. Cheese. You know, this is, you know, the leader of the free world. And, you know, when your own... you know, when your own second chamber of the House of Representatives is not according you the respect that you deserve as Commander-in-Chief, I think it really, really says a lot about the oppositional party that we have right now.
Let me just point this out before Mario
sure.
says it. Just that Mario is that there's a Republican presidential debate that night, too, which has been scheduled for some time, too. I just want to point that out as well.
But Thanks, Michelle.
Mario?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think Arsalan's point is well taken, and you know, the opposition party is the party of no, you know, under any administration, pretty much. But this is the White House really stepped on a landmine here. I mean, they didn't apparently. It's pretty obvious that they didn't when they coordinated in the morning with Speaker Boehner on when you know the morning of the announcement. They didn't coordinate the time that they wanted to do it. Boehner said, "Sure, you can do it," you know, and that day seems fine, but. You know, and then when the president announced the time, apparently nobody in Boehner's office knew that they were gonna pick the time slot that exactly the same time slot as the Republican debate.
They always pick the same time, though. It's always a
debate. And you know, and that's just, I mean, what did the president expect to happen? I mean, he stepped
in
there.
Wait a second. You know, this is like this is like when my son is trying to tell me when we're gonna go to the amusement park. It's like, wait a second. I'm the dad. You know, yeah. You listen to me, bro. You know, I mean.
Wait a second.
You don't have any scheduling conflicts. Go ahead.
Article 1 of the Constitution is the legislature. I mean, it's at the pleasure of the legislature that the House and Senate convene for to hear the president speak on a joint session. It's not the president doesn't get to do whatever he
it's
wants.
It's not his house. In essence, okay. It's not
true,
his house.
And these guys didn't. You know, the president didn't. You know, and Jim Carney, the White House spokesman, stood up and said, and said, well, you know, it's no big deal. There's 20 debates, and there's 3 debates this month. What's the problem with scheduling?
Okay.
With scheduling this for the debate. I mean,
okay, Mario, let's let Dave jump in. Let's go ahead, man.
I don't know, Mario, I don't know when they thought that Obama was going to speak at 10 a.m. It was going to be over Bloody Marys. No, it's always prime time. Look, when this story kept going back and forth with the tick and tack, honestly, what I kept thinking is, Obama, Boehner, why don't you guys just make out already? I mean, it was just like this. I mean, my goodness, they act like there's this like tension between them, that like some sort of ex-couple that keeps having to get back together and then coming apart again. What's disturbing to me about it is that you're starting to see a meme, if you will, develop, a media theme that Obama is a wimp when faced with Republican opposition, that there is Obama backing up every time they get in his face. In basketball terms, Obama keeps getting boxed out.
Yeah, and do you think that's true? Well, Dave, to speak on it, I mean, do you think that that's true? I mean, there's that. So that's a meme. Is that true?
It's where sometimes memes create their own truth. Well, and whether or not it's truth, I mean, we can analyze it and say, well, there were real concerns here by Boehner, and maybe Obama will get a bigger audience before the first NFL game. I mean, there are all kinds of ways you can look at it and turn it around. But sometimes the meme takes on the quality of truth. And I think the meme is Obama gets pushed around.
But reasonable people could argue, why is he putting himself in a position to be pushed around? Because he has a very nice office. It's called the Oval Office.
Well, look at what he did on Thursday, though. I mean, when they moved it to Thursday, all of a sudden, they're surprised to find out that it's the Packers-Saints games, the last two Super Bowl champions, right?
He's not surprised. And, I mean, he's a football
fan. Well,
right.
But then they had to – well, hold on. Then they had to move it to before the game in order to not preempt the game, which would have cost him like 1 million votes in Wisconsin alone, right?
But the question is, why is he going to Congress? Why can't he just give a speech from the Oval? Why can't he give a speech from the Oval?
I don't think you have nearly the presentation and power giving the speech from the Oval Office. I mean, one of the things that Obama's people have said, which I agree with, is that given the tumult that we've seen globally and nationally over the last couple of months, you need that setting. And honestly, with Romney doing an opposing speech, Boehner doing an opposing speech, the setting is Obama's great advantage.
Jimmy, before we move on from this, why don't you have the last word on this? You think this is a big deal, or you think it's much ado about nothing?
I think it's a little bit of both. I don't know. I'm glad I'm not president, because I would have been on somebody's head by now, man. This is crazy. Don't vote me in the office, because I'd have been
rolling up there in the motorcade anyway. Let me in.
Get out of here.
Pull a Berlusconi.
I'd have hit dude with a bag of nickels by now. It would have been over.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to our weekly barbershop segment with Jimmy Israel, Arsalan Iftikhar, Dave Zirin, and Mario Loyola. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. So, Representative Andre Carson, a member of the Congressional Black Caucus, said some things at the town hall meeting sponsored by the group that got a few people riled. Now, I know we got some tape of that somewhere, Michelle. Well, can we hear it?
Yeah, just to give you the context, we've been talking about this big whole issue around unemployment and jobs, and the Congressional Black Caucus has been particularly upset about this because African Americans, as we know, followed by Latinos, have been are more likely to be unemployed, the unemployment rate much higher. So over the course of the summer break, they were having a series of sort of town hall meetings around the country to talk about the employment issue. And at one of those meetings, this is what Andre Carson had to say. He's a Democrat from Indiana. This is what he had to say. And I just have to tell you that the quality of the audio is not that great. So I'm going to repeat a little bit of what he had to say just in case it's hard to hear. Here it is.
The Tea Party is stopping that change. And this is beyond symbolic change. This is the effort that we're seeing of Jim Crow. Some of these folks in Congress right now would love to see us as second-class citizens. Some of them in Congress right now with this Tea Party movement would love to see you and me, I'm sorry, Cameron, hanging on a tree.
So for those of you who couldn't hear that, he said that some of those in Congress right now with this Tea Party movement would love to see us as second-class citizens. Some of them in Congress right now with this Tea Party movement would love to see you. And here he drops his voice and says, I'm sorry, but basically say I'm going to go there, would love to see us hanging on a tree. And in response to that, the lone Republican in the Congressional Black Caucus, Representative Alan West of Florida, who's also been a guest on this program many times, along with Mr. Carson, says he's now reconsidering his membership in the caucus because he says that he feels that this is just a step too far. So I don't know. What do you all think?
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, you're an elected official. You shouldn't ought to be brokering and in race politics in this way. You know, I mean, you're
Jimmy.
Naturally, I have it wrong. Go ahead, A-Train. Go ahead.
You got to dig this and dig it deep. You know, Representative Alan West, you know, calling this offensive as the pot calling the kettle black. This is a man who's called the Obama administration, quote, a tyrannical government. He has said that it's unfortunate that gays get to serve in the military. He says that Obama, quote, does not care for this country. He has said that the Bible proves that Arabs are, quote, wild people. And wait for it. His chief of staff, when he first won his election, Joyce Kaufman, a right-wing radio host, said that illegal immigrants should, quote, be hung on the central square, which, in my definition, is pretty much the same thing as lynching. So, as we've said before, and I've said before, you know, Alan West has stuck his foot in his mouth so many times that he should open up a Payless shoe source.
In his mouth. All right.
Okay. Mario,
well,
what do you think?
The story's not about Alan West. I mean, the story's not about Alan West. The story's about, you know, playing race, you know, the eternal charges of racism against the Tea Party. And, you know, that I find ridiculous. I mean, I know a lot of conservatives, and I don't really know anybody who is that kind of a racist, that the caricature.
Well, what kind of a racist are they?
Well, I mean, it's not. Yeah, no, I stepped on that one, didn't I?
Yeah.
Right. There you go. Sorry, like Mario.
You know, look, this is you know, we live in an. I think conservatives, as much as liberals now, everyone agrees that tolerance of diversity is the hallmark of a free society and of a good society. We're all on board with that, and I think conservatives are as quick to slap down what's truly racist in our ranks as people on the left are. I really believe
that. I've got to go back with Jimmy on this. Is what definition of what is truly racist seems to be a moving target, because the fact of the matter is, you know, you have people making comments about on what were respected forums about the daughters of the Obama daughters, about Michelle Obama, about her appearance, these things. So why, you know what I mean? And some people would say, oh, well, that's, you know what I mean? This comment, what is truly racist, is exactly what we're talking about. Who gets to define that? You know,
The ultimate question here, and it's the question that we're facing in the next election, and it's the eternal debate of American politics, is the way to achieve social justice an opportunity for minorities and opportunities for the disadvantaged through government policies, or is it through the free market and a free society? That's what, and the conservatives believe that those inequalities can only be solved by the free market, and they can only be solved, and the only way to create jobs for those people is to help them, for the disadvantaged, is to increase their level of education, to make them more competitive in the workforce, and to let the free market create those jobs. And the problem that the Obama administration is facing is that, to create jobs, the government has to embrace policies that are pro-business. And the Obama administration is anti-business. It's not new left like Clinton or Tony Blair.
I mean,
it's
Dave.
Old left.
Yeah, I was going to say, the problem, Dave, though, is when the free market is defined by institutional racism. And the problem is also, like, when you have these attacks on government workers that we've seen in state after state, what it also becomes is an attack on black wealth. Because government programs and government jobs were a way that created employment out of the Great Society programs in the 1960s, because the free market didn't also have jobs, but the free market was failing black America. And that needs to be a part of this discussion.
But I think the question, though, is should lynching then be part of this discussion?
Well,
that's the question, is should lynching be part of that discussion? Or when you bring that up, does that just take it to a level where people can't hear you? And Arslan, you think it was appropriate?
Well, no. What I'm condemning with Alan West is his fake outrage. You know, again, when he said that the Bible proves that Arabs are wild people, and his former chief of staff said that illegal immigrants should be hung out in the central square, that is as patently racist as the thing that he's showing his fake outrage against. And so, you know, it's this duplicity that we're seeing, where it's a one-way street, where essentially Republicans can say whatever they want about whoever they want with complete impunity, and then play this fake outrage card when they feel as something has crossed over the line. And so, you know, we have to play by the same, you know, as our colleague Ruben Navarrete always says, we have to play by the same, you know, set of rules. And it seems like the Republicans are only playing with their set of rules.
You know, this is actually a richer topic than I think many people would have thought. And I appreciate this, because it started out as being this kind of tit for tat. And you all are actually amplifying it into something that is worthy of discussion, which is why you kind of wish there would be more discussions like that about these issues. Mm-hmm. And I'm appreciating that. But talking about the power of words, before we go, I do want to raise this one question, because all of you are writers. And so I'm interested in your take on this. Many of you have had the opportunity to, and if you haven't, I hope you will, visit the new Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial here in Washington.
Yep.
Just a kind of a very profound moment for many people, even though the official dedication was washed out. Now, Maya Angelou, the poet, said, who was part of the kind of a committee to help get the memorial up and going, she was one of the advisory groups, said that the quote from King, which is engraved on the side of his statue, which was in fact edited, says it makes it look him look like an arrogant twit. And it's the quote that speaks to, I was a drum major for justice, peace, and righteousness. Do I have time to play it? Okay, let's play it, just so you hear it.
Yes, if you want to say that I was a drum major, say that I was a drum major for justice. Say that I was a drum major for peace. I was a drum major for righteousness. And all of the other shallow things will not matter.
So the quote that is on the memorial takes out the "if you want to say" and says, I was a drum major. And she says that that is totally opposite to the spirit of the memorial. And so I have to ask each of you we only have a minute, just very briefly, is she right? So Dave, you think
she's absolutely correct, because what Dr. King is doing in that speech is going at his critics who are saying, oh, you're just a drum major for rabble rousing. You're just a drum major for riling people up. And he's saying, no, I was a drum major for righteousness.
So you're saying they should change it.
Absolutely.
Mario, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's really terrible to put a quote up that's not what he said.
And Arslan, what do you think?
I don't think anybody's going to confuse Dr. Martin Luther King for, you know, somebody with arrogance and hubris.
So you think it's fine?
It was taken out of context. It was, you know, it was poorly worded, but I think that, you know, his life and legacy speak for itself.
Jimmy, what about you? Final word on this?
These things are always a source of controversy with these memorials. You had controversy with the Lincoln Memorial being kind of looking like a Greek temple. You had controversy over the Statue of Liberty looking like, you know, somebody's mother. So there's always going to be some problem. So, you know, that said, this all follows a hallowed tradition. Let it stand.
All right.
Sell ice cream over by the, you know, by the tidal pool. Let's get it cracking.
I love the difference of opinion as usual. Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist and author of the book The Denzel Principle. He joined us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Arslan Iftikhar is a civil rights attorney, founder of themuslimguy.com, and managing editor of the Crescent Post. He was with us from member station WFPL in Louisville, Kentucky. Mario Loyola is a contributor to the National Review. He's also director of the Center for 10th Amendment Studies at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. That's a conservative think tank. He was with us from member station KUT in Austin. And Dave Zirin is sports editor with The Nation. Dave was here with us in our Washington, D.C. studio. Thank you all so much.
Peace.
Thank you.
Yep, yep.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin. This is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday.